C'est bon,
C'est bon, c'est bon.
Okay, let's
Okay,
go.
we can start. Thanks. Welcome to this exceptional Coffee Club session, which is on Monday. Thanks everyone for coming, especially people here. We have numerous people at the library and people on Zoom also. Today's speaker is Hiroya Umeda, I hope that was right, from the University of Tokyo. He's starting his first year of PhD and he's gonna talk about cosmic uranization sources and the history probed with large galaxy surveys and photo ionization modeling. And thank you.
Well, thank you so much for letting me talk in this wonderful place. I'm Hiroya Umeda, second year master student, gonna start PhD next month. I'm from University of Tokyo, ICRR, and my supervisor is Masayoshi. Today I want to talk about the cosmic ionization sources and history probed with large galaxy surveys and photonization modeling. Bonjour. Yeah, this is Hiroya Umeda. Yeah, the same thing. And my hobby is walking, cycling, sleeping, eating. So I eat wonderful soup.
Sleeping is funny. I'm meeting.
And my interest is galaxy. I mean, I'm interested in astrophysics, astronomy, everything, but especially galaxy evolution and cosmic ionization. So in case maybe some people are not familiar with cosmic ionization, so I'm going to...
This screen is not sharing.
Not sharing?
Yeah.
Hey.
It says, okay. Thank you.
So the cosmic ionization is the cosmological event that happened around redshift 5 to 13, and which ionized the, so after the Big Bang and cosmic ionization, the gas, hydrogen gas was very neutral, but during the redshift 5 to 13, all the gas turned ionized, and that's what we call cosmic ionization. So we know that it happened, but we are not sure what sources ionized the neutral IgM. Was it stars or AGM? And also we don't know the history of the cosmic ionization. Was it slow process or very rapid process? And also topology, did the ionized region form around the galaxy or from the outside the galaxy? So these are topics that people are very interested in right now. And I worked on the sources and history in my master courses. And for cosmic ionization sources, the standard picture is that UV lights from young star forming galaxies ionize the neutral IgM. And this plot shows the radiative hydrodynamical simulation prediction of how ionized gas formed. And the neutral region is shown in orange. And when the stars, the UV lights from stars ionize the surrounding, it forms this blue, ionized region like this. So this is how the star-forming galaxy ionized with the redshift. So the evolution, the ionized region to the redshift, but what about like other sources like AGN or high mass X-ray binaries that emits X-ray? When there's a X-ray emission, because X-ray are more transparent to neutral gas, it creates much larger ionized region like this. So the cosmic ionization scenario will be different from the normal star-forming galaxy. That's why everyone is interested in if there is a contribution from other sources than stars. But for now, we actually know that bright AGN or quasars are too rare at high redshift, so it doesn't contribute to ionization much. But what about fainter AGN or other exotic sources? So actually, there is an indication that there could be hard ionizing sources at high redshift that we don't know. And this is indicated by the study of extremely metal-poor galaxies, or EMPs in short, and which is defined by the galaxy with gas phase metallicity below 10% of solar. And because it's chemically unevolved and has low masses, a stellar mass, they are thought to be the analogs of high redshift galaxies. And from these galaxies, actually, there are very strong high ionization lines detected. And one of the high ionization line is called is helium-2, which has ionization energy of 54.4 electron volts, which is very high. And this plot shows the comparison between one of the EMPG line ratio for helium-2 to H beta to the value that can be explained by stellar model in shown in blue. And if you compare with the observed value with the stellar, the value that can be produced by stellar model, there is actually very large gap. So the stellar model cannot explain these high strong helium-2 lines from young galaxies.
Sorry, what is U, log U?
Log U is ionization parameter.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually in this blue region, we vary a lot of other physical parameters as well. So yeah, so no stellar model seems to explain helium-2, but what can explain this helium-2 then? Well, there has been a lot of idea proposed by many people. For example, just add extra black body. Yeah, seems reasonable. And ultra-luminous X-ray could be contributing to very high ionization line. And radiative shocks. Yeah. So lots of other possible explanation, but they seem not to explain. They seem to explain very high ionization line, because they add, you know, ionization radiation, but they are not sure if they can explain things self-consistently with other emission lines. So for example, this adding extra black body idea, so they can explain the helium-2 to H beta ratio by this dotted purple model. However, if you take a look at O3 to H beta line ratio, there's a large gap between the observed red square and the model. So we are still not sure if these helium-2 ionization line can be self-consistently explained with other emission lines at the same time. So to explain all the emission line at simultaneously, we try to explain all the emission line at simultaneously. But the idea we used was, instead of assuming physical origin at first, we try to explain all these emission lines by determining ionizing spectrum, which can explain all the major emission lines, including the hydrogen line, O2 line, helium-1 line, O3 line, and these, yeah. So a major optical emission lines. And yeah, by determining ionizing spectrum, we can then infer which kind of physical sources contribute to helium-2 ionization, and if these hard emission contributes to cosmic ionization at all or not. And for ionizing spectrum, because we cannot assume physical origin at first, we assume very simple toy model composed of black body and Paolo. And by varying this black body temperature and Paolo index and mixing ratio between these two components, we try to find the ionizing spectrum shape that can explain all these emission line fluxes at simultaneously through photonization mode. And yeah, so for the data, we actually use three objects from EMPG with very high, strong helium-2 and other optical emission lines are detected. And the properties of these galaxies are summarized in this table. And the one I used, the top one is the lowest metallicity, has the lowest metallicity known today. And other galaxies are studied in other literature, so we used it to compare with other literature's results. And 1318 Northwest is the famous object with multi-wavelengths data that we can compare later.
So yeah, we used three objects. And before going to results, let me explain photonization modeling a bit more in detail. So the idea is that the ionizing sources radiates the nebula ionized region, and there'll be a microphysics going on, which can be calculated with photonization code called Cloudy. And then there'll be a predicted emission lines from model. And by comparing the observed value with predicted value, we can quantitatively evaluate which model explains all the emission line best. And for ionizing radiation, as I said before, we use the general spectrum shape by Bernoulli and Paolo. And not only the parameter for ionizing spectrum, but we also varied the gas, the physics in gas too. So we varied ionization parameter and gas phase metallicity and gas density, etc. And by varying these total 7 parameters, we try to find the parameter sets that explain all the emission line simultaneously using Markov chain Monte Carlo method. And these are prior for each parameter. And yeah, so let's go into results. So first, I'm going to show you the comparison between the observed model and the best fit model. And this is the results for the J1631, which has the lowest metallicity. And this plot shows the emission line at each wavelength. And the comparison and the black dot shows the relative error for flux. So the difference between model and observed, which is normalized by observed flux. And the red and yellow bar shows the 1 sigma and 3 sigma uncertainty for the observed flux of each emission line ratios. And if you take a look, you can see that most, all the model, all the emission line, for all the emission lines, they are reproduced within around 3 sigma of the observed error. And for other galaxies, it goes the same too. So we seem to got the model that can explain major emission line simultaneously. And this idea is actually being tested with even higher energy emission lines, such as Neon 5, with my colleague Hatano Shun at NLJ, and so stay tuned for follow-up. But yeah, so that's what I got. And let's get into, so what kind of ionizing spectrum was able to explain all the emission lines simultaneously? So this is the ionizing spectrum shape I obtained for each galaxy, shown by different color. And so the plot is wavelengths and the flux. And I also plotted the normal stellar population model for the comparison in gray. And if you take a look, so at the ionization energy of helium plus, there's a large gap between the normal stellar population model and with other model. This is expected because we need more ionizing photon to explain higher helium 2 line. But what's interesting is that for blue spectrum, it has concave outward shape like the normal stellar population model. But for the red and orange one, it has concave down shape, which cannot be explained by single stellar populations. So what could explain this diversity in spectrum shape? So what we did was we actually try to fit the shape with some models, including AGN and etc. But so this for the left figure, we show the fit of this general spectrum shape with the stellar model and black hole, such as ULX. And this shows the fit with only stellar model, B versus stellar model. So yeah, stellar model. But if you add black hole, the blue model seems to be fit better because of the offset, given that having to ionization energy. And for J1s, so the red one, the shape of red one can also be explained by the combination of the stellar model and the hard black hole radiation. So yeah, so from this analysis, we believe that we infer that this general spectrum shape we obtain from photonization model can be explained by stellar model and black hole, so suggesting the existence of certain hard sources inside MPG, such as black hole. But what's interesting is that so when we fit the stellar model, we also vary the stellar ages because the shape of stellar radiation changes by the age. And the stellar age we obtained for blue one is about, while the stellar age we obtained for red one is 6 megaeon. And the difference between these two are that right here. So when the stellar age is very young, about 2 megaeons, there exist very massive stars with stellar mass around 100 and that's very massive stars exist. But after five megaeons, these stars will die. So there will be less UV emission at this range. That causes the downward shape. But because the black hole exists, there will be an offset on around this ionization energy of 54.4. So what we concluded is that there is a diversity in this ionizing spectrum shape for the young galaxies, but this diversity in shape can be explained by the stellar component, combination of stellar component and black hole, and the change in the stellar age. So as the age, as the galaxy gets older, the stellar component will become less prominent. That's why there is a diversity in the spectrum shape. So yeah, that's the conclusion for this one. But so yeah, let's go back to the cosmic ionization. So if these very faint AGN exists in EMPG, then is it going to contribute to cosmic ionization? So what we did was, for one of the galaxy, because there was XA data, we compared with the XA data and our spectrum. And although at the higher redshift around soft XA to hard XA, we had no constraint, but we extrapolated the Barlow and compared with XA data. And when we compared with XA data, it seems to have very good consistency with XA data and extrapolation. And this could suggest, again, the existence of very hard XA emission. So is this hard XA emission going to contribute to ionization of the universe? So we use this ionizing spectrum shape as a template and try to quantify how much of these XA gonna contribute to ionization. And this, the left plot shows the cumulative number of ionizing photons to the energy. And if you take a look at this line, red line, you can see that by below the ionization energy of helium plus, so 97% of ionizing photon can be explained below ionization energy of helium plus. So only 3%, at most 3% of the X-ray could contribute to the ionization of gas in IGM. So what we concluded was, so there exist hard photons from EMPGs than the normal stellar population, but this contributes only like small amount, so has negligible impact on cosmic ionization in terms of ionizing properties. But but because when the X-ray exists, they could impact the thermal structure of gas. So this hard photons, the existence of hard photons could be interesting for analysis of IgM temperature fluctuation, et cetera, but that was out of scope for our research, so we did not investigate. And yeah, it's already 20 minutes, so it's hard to
work. Go ahead.
Okay. Talk about, so I also studied cosmic ionization history too, and cosmic ionization history is quantified by the neutral gas fraction XH1, which is defined by the ratio of all total hydrogen density, number density, to the total neutral hydrogen density. And the redshift evolution of XH1 is what we refer to as cosmic ionization history, but there is actually a lot of possible scenarios. The rapid one as shown in orange, or the extended one shown in blue. So there are lots of possible scenarios, but we don't know which one is true because those observational constraints are too scattered about pirate ship. So yeah. So these observations, constraints are actually made by CMB observation or Gunn-Peterson effect, or looking at Lyman alpha damping wick, which is observation absorption at radar wavelengths due to the uncertainty principle. And of these observation target, Lyman alpha damping wing is best to probe XH1 at higher redshift because they are less sensitive to existence of neutral fractions. So they can probe neutral IgM much better than Gunn-Peterson effect or CMB. And so we can examine this Lyman alpha damping ring through observational Lyman alpha emission from high redshift galaxies. And by looking at the Lyman alpha emission from high redshift galaxies, we can infer how much of these Lyman alpha are absorbed by neutral IgM surrounding the galaxies. But we need a lot of galaxies because this absorption could differ by environment of galaxies. So what we need is a lot of galaxy sample to infer the absorption Lyman alpha by the neutral gas, and then infer the neutral fraction of IgM, the average neutral fraction of IgM. And so there's been a photometric Lyman alpha, so ignore. So Lyman alpha emitter survey, emitter is the galaxy that emits Lyman alpha in very brightly. And we use Subaru hyperspin cam to collect a lot of Lyman alpha emitter sample because Subaru has very wide field of view with 1.75 degrees square, which corresponds to 0.1 gigaparsec square at redshift 6 to 7. And there has been a strategic survey program, SSP, conducted from till last year and for the fourth field, and with the total area of 1 gigaparsec square, very large. And these four fields are observed in five broad band and several narrow band filters with the depths of 26 magnitude. So there has been a wide and deep survey for Lyman alpha emitters at high redshift. And so, I'll skip, but this is the data we obtained. The cataloging of Lyman alpha emitters are led by Satoshi Kikuta at NLJ. And this now sample size has been steadily increasing from the past year. The final catalog is expected to be around 10,000 galaxies, so very large with statistics. And I will briefly go through it, but so yeah. So what I'm doing is using very large catalog of high redshift galaxies. I constructed Lyman alpha luminosity function and compare
the Riemann alpha luminosity function at each redshift. And by looking at the evolution of Riemann alpha luminosity function, we can infer how much of these Riemann alpha are dimmed by the neutral gas, and then infer the XH1 value. And also, I looked at the clustering analysis, so the spatial distribution of Riemann alpha emitters, because dense region, galaxy dense region has a lot of ionizing photon to ionize the surrounding gas. It is selectively observed, so it increases the bias, galaxy bias correspondingly. So by looking at the galaxy bias of these Riemann alpha emitters, we can infer XH1 value as well. So there has been a constraint, but there's a large uncertainty. So we will need JWST to do the same thing as Subaru did at higher redshift. And we can also use PFS, prime focus spectrograph, which is the instrument that will be available from next year, and which can do, so advantage of PFS that is that it has a lot, 2,400 fibers that can conduct simultaneous spectroscopy for multi-objects. So we can construct very large spectroscopic catalog. And by having a redshift information, we can precisely determine the Riemann alpha luminosity. So we'll have less uncertainty for the statistical properties. And yeah, the comparison between the spectroscopic catalog we have and the one with the PFS is shown here is very large. There will be a large boost in the number. And yeah, and I don't go into detail, but there is a connection between the PFS catalog can be used for detection of 21 centimeter line too, but yeah. So yeah, I'm sorry that the time is
so okay.
But yeah, this is the summary. And yeah, I couldn't explain things in detail, so please ask any questions. Or yeah, thank you.
Have you considered cosmic rays in ionizing source?
Ah, yeah.
Non-thermal, like ionize more helium and oxygen.
Yeah, so there has been I haven't considered cosmic ray in my work, but there has been a proposal. So that so I think it was the group of Halley-Katz, but they suggest that other than ULX, the cosmic ray could also explain some of the ionization lines from young galaxies. But because it's very hard to really tell if the cosmic ray actually involved in this ionization, so we did not consider it in our work. But I think it should be interesting. Yes.
What sort of redshift are the EMPGs?
Yeah, so because my work was done in last year, we had no JWST, so we had to rely on very local galaxy study. So the redshift of our EMPGs are around zero, so very local.
Have you compared to higher redshift stuff now coming out with JWST? We're getting some line ratios from galaxies at very, very high redshift.
Yeah, actually, I have conducted a very preliminary comparison, and there was actually a galaxy with very detection of high emission lines, such as Kelip 2 and etc. But I haven't got the full data, like full analysis yet. So, but I think I want to do that. Yeah, if I have time. Yeah, it should be very interesting. And I think doing the same analysis with JWST is more direct in terms of understanding high redshift galaxies properties, because EMPG, comparing like EMPG with high redshift galaxies has a assumption that EMPGs are local analogs of high redshift galaxies. So yeah. But I think we should do the analysis with JWST galaxies. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, I've one thing. Are you staying at the lab for a bit? Because I have a colleague arriving. She might even be on Zoom.
She is.
Arriving, who's working on the faint lamina alpha luminosity function.
Oh, really?
So it would be interesting to exchange.
Yeah, if you're
staying around at the lab, I don't know whether you leave.
I'll be here for a week, so yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, JWST will provide some sources detection with line, but it's redshift 8, 9 maybe.
Yes.
We already have metals. What about early population redshift 3 without any metals? Maybe the spectrum will be different IMFs. So could you have any constraints on this population 3?
POP3, yeah, like POP3, because there's no like by definition, it has no like all three lines or anything, right? So I think it'd be kind of difficult to have to obtain the ionizing spectrum just from hydrogen line and helium line. But I guess what we can do is by looking at very, very metal poor galaxies and by constraining the ionizing spectrum shape of these very, very metal poor galaxies, but not POP3. And then use that as a template to explain the POP3 galaxies. And if there's a discrepancy, then we can learn about, about the stellar evolution and et cetera. So yeah, I think we cannot use the emission line from POP3 to understand the detail of the ionizing inspection, but we can definitely infer something by comparison of these EMPG to POP3 galaxies.
Can I?
Yes.
If I understand correctly, your picture in order for your model to better fit the ratio, you need two new ingredients, which is the history of stellar population and the mass of black holes, right? So my question. How much critical is the mass of the black holes? Mm-hmm. And the specific accretion mechanism of the gas in the black hole in order to produce the X-ray flux that need to model.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea?
So, yeah, it's very difficult because there are actually lots of black hole spectrum model. And the difficulty with modeling black hole spectrum is that there's no, you cannot observe the soft X-ray region because they are observed by gas, right? So we cannot have observational constraint, but through our analysis, we can infer how much these absorbed soft X-ray should be existing. But but for in terms of mass, our model assumed the mass around 10 to the 3-4 solar mass black hole, so around intermediate mass black hole range, with and we also assumed a very soft extended emission, which is caused by irradiation of disk, to have a bump in a high mass X-ray, because the normal black body, the normal standard black body model will be too hard to explain the helium two
black hole. Or black body.
So actually there's for black body, black hole radiation, people usually assume multicolor black body spectrum, but these are a bit too hard to explain the helium 2 50.4 electron volt. So we need the excess of soft by at soft X-ray and one of the mechanisms to create the excess in soft X-ray is to consider the irradiation disk by the inner radiation. And yeah, so we assume such a model to explain. Yeah. So there is some implication of understanding TLX, but there are still a lot of uncertainty.
Thank you.
Any questions on Zoom?
There's a question.
False alarm. No, that was me. Yeah. Okay. No questions here? Well, let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.
I remind to everyone that, as usual, on Wednesday, but at 2 p.m., starting from this week, we'll have another cafe club in person here. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.